Democrat leader Nick Clegg is here in our studio in Glasgow with me this morning. Good morning.
Morning.
You'd forgive the voter for being a bit muddled, wouldn't you, about where you actually stand, what your core pitch to them is?
I hope not. The Liberal centre ground is something that is the place where we've always been anchored, and it's where we've sought to anchor the government. And I think in a curious way, actually in ways that I have to admit have taken me slightly by surprise, the choice for the for people next May has become more dramatic and crystallised in greater contrast during this conference
season.
More ideological. I'll tell you why. Because you've got, on the one hand, you've got a Labour Party that, of course, famously just refused to talk about the economy. A leader that just failed to even address the deficit. Then you had this bombshell moment last week, at least I thought it was, where George Osborne said very overtly, there's no secret about this now, if the Conservative Party were in power on their own, they would only ask the working age poor to pick up the tab for the mistakes, you know, made by the bankers in the past. They would be the ones to make the additional sacrifice as we continue to do the difficult things necessary to fill the black hole in our public finances.
And you've said you're horrified by that
approach. Well, I'll tell you why I am, because I just think this is such a dismal choice between a broken economy in the hands of Labour, a divided and broken society in the hands of the Conservatives. And that's what I think.
The Conservative offer, these are exactly the people who you say are so terrible right now, and you've helped keep them in office for the last four years.
Well, I've restrained them in office. That's the whole point. What they're saying now.
So that is your offering then, restraint or an anchor?
It's not the only offering. I just think the Conservatives are probably, or George Osborne in that speech, did more than I could in 1,000 speeches to illustrate what the differences are between the Conservatives and the Liberal Democrats, but also what the coalition has done and what we've done to anchor the government in the centre ground. Look, when I came into government with David Cameron, the Conservatives, remember back those days, the Conservatives said they cared about the environment. They don't talk about it at all. They said they wouldn't bang on about Europe. It's all they bang on about.
Which is why you said the other day that you were duped. Is that how you feel?
I didn't say it was duped. I just said they have moved. They have moved rapidly to the right, just as Labour moved rapidly to the left. Now, you're right. We're not faring well in the opinion polls, but I think one thing people will at least, I hope, acknowledge about us is we've held firm. In fact, we've held much firmer than many people.
But holding firm is not an ideology, is it? You're talking about this election. About this election being ideological and the parties on the left and right moving further apart. Where is your core identity? Yes. What is it that the Lib Dems stand for on their own, not in comparison to Labour or in comparison to Conservatives?
I'll tell you exactly where we stand, and I feel this has always been the case. Is if you've got on the left, you've got socialism, the Labour Party, which is all about the state telling people what's good for them. You've got on the right, you've got the Conservative Party that basically wants to keep the pecking order as it is. What has always distinguished British liberalism, and I feel this very strongly, is an absolute sort of huge emphasis on opportunity. That what everybody in politics should be about is trying to spread opportunity such that everyone can get ahead in life, can live out their dreams, can use their talents to the greatest possible extent. And that's why if you look at the signature tune things that we've done, I mean, don't listen to the words, what we've done, our actions, judge us by actions, whether it's the massive expansion in apprenticeships, the huge transformation of the tax system so people on low pay keep more money as they work, or the very heavy emphasis on early years education, childcare, care, putting more money into schools that cater for disadvantaged children.
And again, difficulty some voters might have is that at one moment you're talking about the achievements of the coalition and on the other hand you're telling us how terrible the Conservatives are.
I think people find it totally straightforward that we are in government with another party. That means that both parties need to make compromises, that both parties now at conference season start talking about what they would like to do if they were in government on their own, and that therefore inevitably the differences between those two parties is sharper when they talk about the future than when they govern in the present.
Let's talk about the future right now and really explore the extent to which that you are different from your current coalition partners, the Tories. Now, you've talked about how angry you are about the Conservative plan freeze on working age benefits. That would save over £3 billion. Towards the deficit reduction plan that you are currently signed up to in the first 2 years of the next parliament. So,
well, it's not clear whether it's for that or it was for their tax breaks. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. You see, that's why I think they're getting it. I think they made a huge error because we have funded the bulk of our tax cuts, which are the Liberal Democrat tax cuts of raising the income tax allowance, by asking people at the top to pay some more. Right. And that's very important. What they're saying is they're going to give with one hand and take with another. Precisely the kind of people who should benefit from our changes
are the people who are going to be hit
by the Conservative.
But you are committed to deficit reduction. You are signed up to deficit reduction targets. You've said that you would partly pay for that through the Mansion tax, which would raise £1.5 billion. Right. So where would you get the rest of the money? Where is the axe going to fall in order to tackle the deficit properly?
No, look, I think all parties have to confront that question. It's a legitimate question. And what we need to set out now is not every single cross T and dotted I, because that will obviously come in the coming months, but is your overall approach. And our overall approach is that we want to maintain roughly what we've done in this government, which is that the bulk of the savings come from spending reductions, about 80%, but about 20% come from tax increases.
Get a little bit more specific now, because far all that you have come up with is the mansion tax, that is going to be a drop in the ocean. In terms of deficit reduction, not in terms of what you're going to how you're going to raise extra money for the NHS.
Danny Alexander yesterday announced £10 billion worth of extra savings from government.
Efficiency savings.
Yes, well, we've already saved huge amounts of money in that way, and Danny Alexander and the Liberal Democrats in government have been heavily responsible for that. So it is simply not true to say we haven't, nor is it true, of course, to say that we have, unlike the unfunded commitment to protect the NHS by the Conservatives, it's not true to say we haven't spelt out.
Right.
We have said
there is a need for tax rises. What you haven't really said is where they are going to come from.
But we have. We have said, for instance, that we think there should be council tax bans levied on properties over £2 billion.
Right.
On taxes, we've said that we want to change the dividend tax breaks so that they're fairer. That saves you some money. The tax breaks...
That was part of what you unveiled in order to raise money for the NHS. I'm talking about the broader deficit reduction plan.
But that is very important, because what we're doing, which is unlike any other party in this conference season, I mean, you will search in vain for any costed plans from the Conservatives. Right. They're just spraying around unfunded sort of moon-on-the-stick-type problems.
And therefore that means you don't have to really come up with anything.
No, exactly, that's the difference. We have said there are a number of things we want to do which we're costed in full. So we've costed in full how we're going to provide that extra £1 billion a year for the NHS. We've costed in full how we're going to, for instance, scrap the marriage tax allowance, which is in effect a tax penalty for couples who choose not to get married in order to fund extra childcare and so on. And we've said in addition to that, we're setting out an approach on how you deliver deficit reduction but deliver it fairly.
Right, an approach, and some measures
which have already sketched out
You're going to need something big, though, to come up with the level of savings that you would need to make in the future to really tackle the deficit. You need something big. Steve Webb, your pension spokesman, suggested yesterday that you needed to look at tax relief on pensions, not just the wealthiest pensioners, but those with smaller pension pots. Is that something that is going to become a policy? Because
Steve is looking at, because as he has pointed out, the tax relief paid for by ordinary taxpayers in the pension tax relief system go disproportionately to the people who are better off than others. So in a sense, you have a sort of a distribution of wealth through those tax reliefs from the poorer to the richer. It's something he's looking at, but it is not a policy we're committed to yet. Of course we will look at these things, and you're perfectly entitled to say, come back to this studio as you work up those plans. I think I'm entitled to say, look, seven, eight months before a general election, you're not going to have any of the parties crossing every T and dotting every I. What you have in the Liberal Democrats is a party which has already set out more details than either of the other two. And crucially, we've set out a clear set of principles which will guide our decisions, which again are quite different in their emphasis on economic credibility on the one hand, but also social fairness on the other, which sets us apart from the other two parties.
Where do those principles guide you in terms of your position on Europe? You've talked about being a passionate pro-European, being the party of in, and yet it is reported today that you are prepared, if you go into coalition with the government, with the Conservatives in the future, to allow them to have something that is really important, which is a vote on our membership of the EU. Is that the case?
No, look, I'm simply not going to get into sort of conversations about individual policies, red lines and so on. What I will say to you is this, and I think there's always been a bit of a sort of some crossed wires on the European issue. I am a major advocate of a referendum on Europe. I always have been all my adult political life. My party has always campaigned for a referendum when the rules change in the European Union. We went even further than that in this government. We actually legislated on it, and you will be able to look at the record in the House of Commons to see stirring speeches from David Cameron and William Hague saying this is the way to guarantee in law a referendum to the British people when the rules change and new things are asked of the United Kingdom in the European Union. That is what I believe in. The Conservatives, subsequent to that, for reasons which you've got to ask them, decided to reinvent the wheel all over again because they've got this very tortured internal debate about Europe.
Well, it's not it's because there is wide concern, isn't there? The rise of UKIP wouldn't be happening if there wasn't widespread concern about our relationship with Europe.
So they've now plucked out of thin air an arbitrary date, 2017, 2017 when a referendum would take place. We have in law a guarantee about when a referendum will take place, when the rules of the game change. And more than that, I say that the question on the ballot paper should be in or out. And I would relish that moment. What I'm not going to do, and I don't think any non-Conservative should be expected...
You should relish the moment. Why don't you allow people to have their say and commit to it? And
we've committed in law.
Right now, and people could campaign.
But that's where the crossed wires are. I can commit now. Not only commit, in my actions, we have legislated for the circumstances in which a referendum will take place. What I'm not going to commit to, because I'm not a Conservative, and I don't have this sort of this complete obsession about this whole thing...
At the point of treaty change, it's not relevant when there doesn't seem to be any treaty change.
No, it is actually. We don't hold referenda every other Tuesday in this country. We do so when something has changed and we need to really make up our mind as a country. Now, look, the Conservatives have decided for their own internal reasons to pluck out this arbitrary date. By the way, on the back of what I predict will be a largely synthetic renegotiation of the terms of Britain's membership, which won't satisfy their backbenchers. Because what the backbenchers want in the Conservative Party is not deliverable in Europe. What is deliverable for the backbenchers is not acceptable to Europe. So that is what they're committing to. I can't reasonably be expected to endorse a strategy which I don't think makes either much sense in practice and confounds and contradicts what we've solemnly legislated on earlier on in this Parliament.
And you don't think Europe is an issue for...
It's a huge issue.
..for voters?
Yes. Otherwise, of course, it's a huge issue, and I've stuck my neck out at some considerable cost to say someone has to stand up for the open, tolerant, generous-hearted values which I love about
this
country.
So, if you would relish the moment of making that argument of fighting and putting the case in a referendum, then why not commit to it and allow the people to have their say?
We have committed to a referendum in law.
At the moment of treaty change or major powers being transferred. You've acknowledged it's an issue. I'm just wondering if you don't allow
people to
have their
say. So the difference of opinion is not should you or should you not have a referendum.
It's the point at which you do it.
It's when you have a referendum.
Correct.
And I think I'm perfectly entitled to say the Conservative Party keep changing on this. They change literally every other month, the Conservative Party. They've done so for the last 15 years.
Do you understand how damaging it was? When in that debate with Nigel Farage, you said you didn't want Europe to change in the future.
No, I didn't.
That you envisaged the same kind of Europe that we have now.
No, I didn't actually say that. Someone asked me a very smart question, which is what do you think it'll look like in 10 years' time? I think the fundamentals of a single market, creating the world's largest borderless single market, 500 million consumers, will remain at the heart of the European Union. Of course it should be, and I hope will be, less bureaucratic, less wasteful, less money spent on wasteful things like the common agricultural policy, things I've campaigned on, or I've written books about how we should reform the European Union. But the fundamentals of it, that in this footloose, fancy-free world, where we have to deal with so many things that cross borders, whether it's climate change, whether it's cross-border terrorism, whether it's cross-border crime, whether it's globalisation, whether it's trade talks, I think it makes sense to do that together.
Free movement of people, immigration from the European Union, which is something that we know is a concern for voters, that is not one of the issues that bothers you.
What bothers me enormously is the idea that people can come to this country from elsewhere in the European Union and claim benefits, no questions asked, no strings attached from day one. I think that's wrong. And I think what did go wrong in the past is that free movement became synonymous with a free-for-all in benefits. And that is wrong. And that's why I've actually been as hard-nosed as anybody saying let's split those two things and say to people elsewhere in the European Union, you can come and look for work here, you can make a contribution, but you cannot rely on the generosity of British taxpayers as soon as you arrive. And by the way, I expect the same things of the, whatever it is, 2 million Brits who are elsewhere in the European Union. They should go, we should be going there to look for work, to make a contribution, not to live off the welfare states of other European Union member states.
Nick Clegg, thank you very much. We're listening to